Some communities near Pittsburgh bear the brunt of air and water pollution and the health issues that come with them.
On my street alone, one block, there's three people with cancer.
I'm Carol Holsapple. This week on the Allegheny Front, we continue our series, Hazardous to Your Health. We'll hear from community activists who are literally sick of industrial pollution and are looking for solutions from people who've been through it. Plus, an environmental lawyer says President Trump's decision to pull out of the Paris Climate Agreement shouldn't surprise anyone. Just look at some of his other policies.
This is the singular biggest assault on environmental regulations we've ever seen out of the United States government.
And is a new coal plant bucking the industry trend? We'll find out. That's all coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. After a lot of speculation as to what President Donald Trump would do about the Paris Climate Agreement, we found out in a White House Rose Garden announcement.
So we're getting out, but we will start to negotiate, and we will see if we can make a deal that's fair. And if we can, that's great. And if we can't, that's fine.
President Trump is pulling the U.S. out of the landmark climate agreement. It was adopted by 195 countries, which committed to voluntarily reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Trump said the cost of the Paris Agreement was too high for American businesses and workers.
I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
The mayor of Pittsburgh, Bill Peduto, had something to say about that. He and dozens of other mayors around the country pledged to do what they can to reach the goals of the Paris Agreement. Peduto even said that Pittsburgh would transition to 100% renewable energy by 2035.
Pittsburgh is the shining example of what the Paris Agreement is all about.
This week for our podcast, Trump on Earth, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier spoke with Ann Carlson. She's the co-director of the Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment at UCLA's School of Law. And she closely watched the UN climate negotiations that led to the Paris Agreement. Here's some of their conversation.
What does it actually mean that the U.S. has pulled out of the agreement? Is there something that will happen because of it? Factories in the U.S. Can emit more pollution, or an automaker like GM can make bigger trucks that use more fuel and are just more polluting. What's the sort of upshot of this agreement now?
So, kind of strangely, the upshot of the president's announcement last week that the United States is withdrawing from Paris doesn't actually change a thing in the immediate term. That's for two reasons. The first reason is that the U.S. actually can't withdraw from the Paris Agreement for about 2.5 years, and then it takes a year after that before we're formally withdrawn. So this is really just an announcement that we're going to withdraw sometime in the future. That's part of the terms of the treaty. But secondly, the United States submitted its commitment to reduce greenhouse gas emissions under the Obama administration. And part of that commitment was something called the Clean Power Plan, which gets existing electric utilities to reduce their greenhouse gas emissions. And part of that plan also included reducing emissions from vehicles, including passenger cars. The Trump administration has already made clear that it is going to repeal the Clean Power Plan. And in addition, it's pretty clear that we're going to roll back some of the automobile standards. We're going to do that whether or not we're in Paris or not. That's been part of the president's environmental platform since he started campaigning. He's made that abundantly clear. So one of the strange things about last week's announcement is that in some ways it really didn't change anything except to make really clear what was already clear, which was that the United States was going to repudiate its commitment to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions. That's what's really significant.
You've written that, you know, it'd almost be better if the U.S. pulled out of the Paris Agreement rather than stay in with this sort of lackluster commitment or zero commitment to actually implementing its climate reductions by eliminating the Clean Power Plan, et cetera. Can you explain that a little bit? It's almost like better no effort than a half-baked effort.
So my argument is really a little bit different than that. The Trump administration has assaulted environmental regulations in every respect, and it's also already made really clear that it doesn't believe in engaging in international negotiations to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So, for example, the Trump budget slashes virtually all staff across federal agencies who work on climate change. The budget contemplates zero money going to the international negotiations that actually brought Paris into being. It proposes zero money for a fund to help developing countries adapt to climate change. And as I've already said, it eliminates the Clean Power Plan, it slashes the auto regulations and some other rules that were really important for reducing greenhouse gas emissions. So in my view, repudiating Paris actually really isn't doing very much, except that it's telling the world what the world should already know, which is this is the singular biggest assault on environmental regulations we've ever seen out of a United States government. And so by making it clear that we're withdrawing from Paris, to me, that's just telling people you should understand what we're already doing, which is to repudiate climate change across the board in every way. And I think that may have the effect, actually, of galvanizing public opinion against the United States position, both internationally and domestically.
And I want to ask you about this withdrawal procedure. It takes 3 years to withdraw from the agreement. It so happens that the U.S. withdraws the day after the next U.S. presidential election. So is there a chance that if Trump gets defeated and there's a more, you know, he gets defeated by a candidate who wants to re-enter the agreement, can the U.S. just hop right back in?
Yes, it can just hop right back in. All it has to do is basically deposit a notice with the international community saying we agree to be bound by the Paris Agreement, and then to submit a new United States commitment to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions.
Good to know. So I guess my last question is, you know, this is always a question I have about when we're talking high-level, you know, regulations, laws, treaties. What impact will pulling out of the Paris Agreement have for people's everyday life? I mean, people sitting out there in America or other parts of the world, you know, what impact will it have?
Well, in the immediate term, you know, people probably won't feel very much. In the United States, in the longer term, we're really going to need to see, you know, how effective the cities and states that are going to step in and try to reduce their own greenhouse gas emissions are going to be. It might actually mobilize people in many respects, politically, to get their local governments and their state governments to act on climate change. Around the world, here's the biggest issue that I worry about. In the Paris Agreement, the United States provided a huge amount of the diplomatic leadership necessary to get China to the table, to get India to the table, to get the global community to agree to reduce emissions. Without U.S. leadership, I think there's a big fear that even though the Paris Agreement remains in place, and even though other countries have committed to continue to work to reduce their emissions, we really need to reduce our emissions much more dramatically than what the Paris Agreement has called for. And we need leadership for that. So without leadership from the United States, I think there's a big question about will we get on the path that we need to get on to avert the worst consequences of climate change. Those consequences will likely be felt over the course of the next 10, 20, 40, 50, even 100 years. So this is a long-term problem where, you know, people in the future could really suffer the consequences of the failure of the United States to act on this problem today.
That was Ann Carlson, the Shirley Shapiro Professor of Environmental Law and co-director of the Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment at UCLA's School of Law. She spoke with the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier for our podcast, Trump on Earth. You can find more of their conversation on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. This episode and all of our previous ones are also at TrumpOnEarth.org. So subscribe and tell a friend. Later in the show, Reed Frazier will be back with a story about an industry that Donald Trump championed throughout his campaign and presidency, the coal industry. All this month, we're looking into pollution in Pittsburgh's communities for our series, Hazardous to Your Health. Last week, we visited Clairton, about 15 miles south of Pittsburgh along the Monongahela River. It's home to the largest coke-making facility in the country. The U.S. steel plant bakes coal into coke, which is then used in the steelmaking process and other facilities in the Mon Valley. According to the EPA, people in Clairton and surrounding towns have a high lifetime cancer risk from breathing toxins in the air. Residents there are just beginning to learn more about the health risks of air pollution and get active about cleaning up the air around the coke plant. People like Clairton City Council member Richard Ford.
I was born and raised here, and after high school, I went directly into the military. And I stayed away probably a year and a half. And I came home on leave, and I could not breathe. I was coughing all the time. Mm-hmm. That was the first time I ever noticed the real difference in the air quality.
And Clairton community activist Cheryl Hurt, who uses an indoor air monitor to track pollution in her house.
I have a daycare, a group daycare at my home. I also have a spec monitor. I look at that spec monitor all the time. We walk past it. If it's too high, then that means my children don't go outside to play.
For Thaddeus Popovich, this all sounds familiar. He knows what it's like to live in a community plagued with air pollution. Popovich spent years trying to stop the pollution from DTE Energy's Shenango Coke plant on Neville Island that blew towards his home in Ben Haven.
Ben Haven is a small borough. There are several boroughs strung along the river there, going downstream from Pittsburgh, tree-lined. People are out walking their dogs and pushing baby buggies. There's bus service into the city. It's a nice community, except for when there was dirt coming from the Shenango Coke Works.
DTE closed the Shenango plant last year, and the community group there, Allegheny County Clean Air Now, claimed victory. Here at the Allegheny Front, we introduced Thaddeus Popovich to Richard Ford and Cheryl Hurt to talk about what it's like to have a job-creating but polluting industrial plant in their neighborhood and what to do about it. Hurt started off by describing her hometown and U.S. Steel's importance there.
Clairton is a small-knit community, basically generations of U.S. Steel employees. I worked at U.S. Steel 10 years. Yeah. I just went to work, had a paycheck, took care of my family, and my father before me, my grandfather before me, they all worked at the steel mill.
We want to know why we're seeing more people with these breathing diseases and things of that nature. So I don't know if there's different particulates in the air now than it was then or what the situation is, but we really want to find out and we want to protect our people.
One of the goals that we look at in terms of the pollution here is hopefully we can get it cleaned up. We do not want to see our plant closed. We do want to be able to breathe.
Our tax base would definitely affect our school and our city. Now, our school would probably really shut down. So that's a thing that you keep in the back of your mind all the time.
Our intention was not to have the place shut down either. We wanted them to do a better job. They were in constant violation of the law. Mm-hmm. And we would make a comment in Allegheny County, if you drive a car whose exhaust system isn't up to snuff, you can't get it, it doesn't pass inspection, or you get fined. And we would point to that facility. So they're in violation almost three quarters of the time, and they're still operational. How does that work?
And a real question for me, is there different particulates in the air? We came up with this, and it never seemed to bother us that bad.
Well, there are some others that come out, too. And again, I learned this along the way, something called volatile organic compounds or hazardous gases. One of my favorites, or isn't my favorite, actually, is benzene. Mm-hmm. Okay, you get that when you're filling your car with gasoline. There's benzene coming. It's that mm-hmm. smell. That's not good for you. There's a direct correlation with leukemia. Okay, we have, and in our area we have leukemia hotspots. Why would that happen? Okay, but you can't prove it in a court of law, can you? And that's problematic. So there are a whole host of other things that come off a facility like that. Anything that gets burnt as a fossil fuel will give you those types of materials. So it could be these soots, these small particles, benzene, toluene, some of these other sulfur dioxide, the rotten egg smell. They're all there in some form or another.
We want to be able to have our children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and generations after that be able to stay here without having respiratory illnesses, asthma, and cancer. The big C is really in all of our families, we all have cancer patients. Our neighbors on my street alone, one block, there's three people with cancer.
So what we did, we got agitated enough. We said we need to have regular meetings with the Allegheny County Health Department. And they acceded to that. We got monthly meetings with them. How about that? Then we went to the plant gate, demonstrated a little bit, and we said we would like to have meetings with the plant manager and his staff on a regular basis. They let it happen. So we had monthly meetings with the health department and the plant management. And there was always someone from headquarters from Detroit, a so-called environmental engineer, meeting with us and talking to us about their issues. So that was a breakthrough, a real breakthrough. So we got to see the faces behind the mask of Shenango, you might say. And that would, and I would suggest if you could do that with U.S. Steel. So who are the faces behind the Coke Works? Who are the faces at the Allegheny Health Department who are supposed to help you with regulation?
Well, I totally agree with what you're saying. And I think now and currently we're about to put a citizens group together to meet with the health department as well as U.S. Steel. I was at a meeting recently where U.S. Steel did come, and we talked about the different communities are called Council of Governments. We were talking, and they were talking about the agreement that U.S. Steel, meaning they, were talking about the agreement that they had with the health department, and they have this agreement for attainment. That's the term they use to come into compliance. Sometimes they are, sometimes they are not.
May I suggest you also take the opportunity to go to Board of Health meetings, which happen every other month. I am always there, even now, because it's still there. There's still asbestos to be dealt with. We already know that. There's probably some sort of remediation that's required. It's undoubtedly a toxic waste site. So what is that going to look like at the end of the day? And we, again, we want a place at the table.
I think the more that my community understands that's happening to us, the more they understand that we can do something about this. But I think the biggest problem is because they cannot see it. They don't know how serious it really is. And it's not as simple as those individuals who that's part of their job. So as a citizen here in Clairton, it's difficult but doable. If it makes a difference in my community, then we can do it.
But and our being organized and being able to do what we did, it happened over a few years. It just didn't happen just like that. It takes time, and it just evolved somehow. And people ask, well, how did you do that again? I said, I don't know. It just happens.
Looking at your picture of all of what you've gone through and all the meetings and all the people you talked to, and even with the plant shutting down, do you see a vast improvement, a small improvement?
The air is much cleaner with it shut down, night and day. Night and day, okay. Keep your expectations low, though, and get a few people like me who are retired.
That was a conversation between Thaddeus Popovich, a resident of Ben Avon who fought pollution from the now-shuttered Shenango Coke plant on Neville Island, and community members from Clairton. Cheryl Hurt runs a daycare center and recently initiated a class action lawsuit against U.S. Steel for its negative impact on Clairton. And Richard Ford is a Clairton City Council member. The Allegheny Friends' Julie Grant got them all together and produced this story as part of our series, Hazardous to Your Health, reporting on pollution in Pittsburgh's communities. A new coal mine is opening in southwestern Pennsylvania. The plans were already in motion before Donald Trump became president, but he's still getting credit for it in coal country.
You could actually feel the difference in the atmosphere up here the day of the election.
Later on the Allegheny front, does a new mine mean the coal industry is on its way back? It's complicated. Stay tuned. We just heard from some residents of the Mon Valley near Pittsburgh about how they're just starting to come to grips with the effects of industrial air pollution. Researchers are also trying to understand how polluted air impacts the health of people living in these communities, especially kids. Children living near sources of pollution have the same risk of developing asthma as those exposed to secondhand tobacco smoke. Liz Reed reports on preliminary results from a survey of 1,200 children living near Allegheny County's biggest polluters.
I'm sitting on a swing at the playground outside Woodland Hills Academy in Turtle Creek, Pennsylvania. I can't see it or smell it, but according to data gathered by Carnegie Mellon University, I'm breathing in about 8 parts per billion of nitrogen dioxide and about 5 micrograms per cubic meter of black carbon. That's primarily because I'm downwind of U.S. Steel's Edgar Thomson Works in Braddock, just outside of Pittsburgh. The facility has been making steel for almost 150 years, and that entire time, nearby residents have been breathing in the pollution that it spews from its stacks, including the children of the Woodland Hills School District, and researchers are finding it's impacting their health.
For years, we've had school nurses tell us a large percentage of children have asthma, that up to half the kids in our schools might have an asthma inhaler.
That's Deborah Gentile, an allergy and asthma specialist with the Pediatric Alliance. For 2 years, she's been collecting data on asthma rates among elementary school children who live near sources of pollution, such as the steel mill in Braddock, Clairton Coke Works, and the Cheswick Power Station in Springdale.
It's running about 35%. And of those, about two-thirds of them, or 24%, actually know they have asthma, but we're diagnosing new asthma in about 10%.
By comparison, the national asthma rate is about 8%. In Allegheny County as a whole, it's 13%. Gentile's method is straightforward. She sends children home with a simple 4-question survey for their caretakers to fill out, asking how often the child has experienced symptoms such as wheezing, coughing, or trouble breathing. Gentile compared the results of her survey with the Carnegie Mellon data and found, unsurprisingly, that kids who live near point sources of pollution are more likely to have asthma.
The kids that are exposed to the highest level of PM2.5s as well as the highest level of black carbon are twice as likely to have a diagnosis of asthma than those who are exposed to the lower. So that really has to be a call for public policy change to clean this air up.
PM2.5 is particulate matter that is 2.5 microns or smaller in diameter. For comparison, a human hair is about 60 microns in diameter. PM2.5 is the main ingredient in black carbon, a byproduct of burning fossil fuels, the concentrations of which CMU professor Albert Presto measured.
Particulate matter is solid or liquid material that floats around in the air. And they're actually little particles, right? They're not gas molecules, they're little solid or liquid drops. Particulate matter is made up of literally thousands of different components.
Because these particles are so small, they embed deep into the lungs. Particulate matter has been linked to health problems such as lung cancer, asthma attacks, and even premature death, according to the American Lung Association. Nitrogen dioxide also contributes to kids developing asthma or having more frequent attacks. Gentile says she's particularly troubled by another aspect of the data.
Near these point sources of pollution, we tend to see more minority families as well as more lower socioeconomic status, and that's what they find in other cities as well. These are the people who can't afford to live elsewhere.
Gentile says the pollution and the asthma it causes have far-reaching consequences in a child's life.
As a doctor who takes care of children with asthma, I see them missing school, not being able to participate in activities. They're not sleeping at night. Their parents aren't sleeping at night. It has a tremendous impact on their life.
Gentile and her team are currently compiling all of the data from her surveys and expect to put out a full report later this year with the goal of spurring government action. To start, she'd like to see asthma screenings mandated in schools, and she's hopeful the data showing that a third of children near these pollution sources have asthma will be the push policymakers need to clean up the air in Allegheny County. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Liz Reed.
That story is part of our series, Hazardous to Your Health. We're reporting on pollution in Pittsburgh's communities, and there's more at AlleghenyFront.org. This is the Allegheny Front. I'm Kara Holsapel. We'll be right back. When President Trump announced the U.S. was pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, he said it was to protect American workers. And he gave a shout out to the coal industry with a surprise mention of one particular coal mine in Pennsylvania.
A big opening of a brand new mine, it's unheard of. For many, many years, that hasn't happened.
Coal mines have been closing down for about a decade. The Allegheny Friends' Reed Frazier reports on why this one in Somerset County is opening.
The Acosta Deep Mine is an hour east of Pittsburgh, in a green valley between two ridges. Matt Owens stands where the mine entrance will be, at the bottom of a freshly dug hole, about the size of a football field.
This is the actual coal pit.
Owens is the mine's safety manager. A couple of crews around the pit are installing high-voltage electric lines to run equipment and fitting together big tubes to bring fresh air underground. When opened, the Acosta Deep Mine will employ around 70 miners. Owens points to the wall of the pit.
You can look, the coal seam's right there at the bottom.
Now, this mine was in the works well before Donald Trump was elected president, and it's not the same kind of coal used to make electricity. The mine will produce metallurgical, or met coal, which is used to make steel. Coal industry consultant Art Sullivan says the price for metallurgical coal has surged in the past year, thanks to events outside the U.S. China cut back its own production, and a cyclone hurt the coal industry of Australia, the largest exporter of met coal. Sullivan says this mine opening is about market economics, not politics.
It's quite certain that the president's election and any of his policies have had absolutely nothing to do with that new mine.
But don't tell that to the regulars at the nearby coal miners' cafe.
Well, my business changed since November the 8th.
Dave Berkey owns an excavating company that had done work with the mines, but that work slumped. Half the coal mining jobs in the county were lost between 2012 and 2015.
It used to be a lot of coal, and we had to regroup and get into some other areas, but now it's coming back, and actually people in the area is happier right now because there is jobs coming into the area.
Berkey is having breakfast with a group of other local business owners, all of whom supported Trump. He says his business from coal mines began picking up the day after the election.
Literally.
You could actually feel the difference in the atmosphere up here the day of the election.
That's Tom Altman. He owns a local company that makes lighting.
People just felt hopeful again. There's hope back in this country where there was no hope before.
That optimism may be real, but energy analysts say most coal in this country is used to make electricity, and it still faces big challenges, namely competition from cheap natural gas. Whoever or whatever is causing the Acosta mine to open, the end result is the same for Matt Owens. As he leaves the mine pit in his pickup, he remembers worrying about losing his job as his company weathered layoffs over the last few years.
I was hoping it didn't come to that. It crossed all of our minds. We didn't know what was going to happen.
Now, he says, it feels good to have work for a few years, at least. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Reed Frazier.
Thanks for listening to the Allegheny Front. Our Trump on Earth podcast is a co-production with Point Park University's Environmental Journalism Program. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. Thanks to 90.5 WESA's Mark Neupbar for his help with reporting from the climate rally in Pittsburgh. Julie Grant has been working hard on our series, Hazardous to Your Health. All of those stories are at AlleghenyFront.org. I'm Carol Holsapel.
Support for the Allegheny Front comes from the Heinz Endowments, the Pittsburgh Foundation, the Foundation for Pennsylvania Watersheds, and the Benedum Foundation.